supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Welcome to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up later in the show, a question on many people's minds. What has happened to all the hydrangea flowers in the mid-Atlantic and Northeast? We'll reveal the answer to that probing question and give you high hopes for your hydrangeas next season when we get to the question of the week. In the meantime, though, it's a fascinating phone call show, cats and kittens, and you know what that means. We're taking that heap and helping at 1-888-346-9499. Arlene, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Thank you. Good to be here with you.
It's good to have you here with us, Arlene. Where are you?
Westchester, Pennsylvania.
Very good. I was just there at the Iron Hill Twilight Bike Race a little while ago. Did you come up and say hello?
No, I didn't. We were planning on it, and then something happened, and we weren't able to make the event.
That's what all the girls say. All right. Well, I'll try to be nice to you anyway, Arlene.
Okay, good.
What can we do for you?
Well, I planted cantaloupe plants this year. And,
okay, no, you didn't.
I didn't?
No, you probably did not. Did you plant the things that they call cantaloupes in the supermarket, the netted melons?
Yes, it's a netted melon.
Okay. Those are musk melons.
Okay.
Those, like, quote, yams, you know, they'll have a barrel of sweet potatoes, and they're all sweet potatoes. No American has ever seen a yam. And very few gardeners have ever grown a true cantaloupe, which is a melon that makes your musk melon look like a boy. Cantaloupes are a little bit more exotic than the fruit that we call cantaloupe, but they are felt to be the most intensely delicious. There's actually a variety of French cantaloupe called, I believe, ambrosia, that was once said to have aphrodisiac powers. That'll beat your musk melon, girl.
All right.
Okay, so you're growing musk melons.
Yes, and we've planted them other years, but this year they've taken off, and they have vines that are probably 10, 15 feet long.
Okay.
I have 20, 30 of those overtaking my garden. I have, at this point, 17 melons.
Right.
Growing.
Good, good.
And I have them all protected up off the soil.
Good, good, good. Are you pulling off the new flowers that appear?
No, that's what I don't know how to handle this. So I want to know if I can determine if I can cut them off at the end, the runners.
No, just pull them off. Oh, no. Don't disturb the plants.
Oh, okay.
Because every new bit of growth of plant that produces new leaves, that's more solar panels to fuel the growth of your existing melons and to help them get to full ripeness.
Okay. I have blooms galore. I mean, I have, it just seems like every few inches.
And at this point in the season, it is time to start pinching off the new flowers.
Okay.
Because, as you know, it takes quite a long time for a flower to turn into a full-size melon, much less a ripe one. So these flowers will just drain energy from your plants without giving you anything, and they will slow the ripening of your existing melons.
Ah.
By pinching off the new flowers, you will divert the energy back to the existing fruits. Same thing with watermelon and pumpkins. Once you get to a certain number of fruits and a certain time in the season, it's time to start pinching off flowers. Once we get past the end of August, it's time to do that with peppers and tomatoes, too.
I've never done that.
Because those fruits won't have time to ripen. It's a waste of time, and it's sucking the plant's energy.
Ah, well, that's good to know. I did not know that.
So is that it?
That's it. You've answered my questions about the melon and our pumpkins that we have growing in the front yard.
So you just have no yard. You have no landscape left. I mean,
We do. Yeah, we have a 6/10 of an acre, and we have.
Yeah, but the pumpkins must be covering 5/10.
Well, I'm just taking the vines and I'm putting them in a circle, and I'm. very creatively giving them paths to grow.
It's what people don't realize about pumpkins is they're so cute, you know, and a lot of times people are growing mid-sized pumpkins, like pie pumpkins. Mm-hmm. Or they'll grow the mini pumpkins because they've heard that regular pumpkins take over the garden. And the cruel trick is the mini pumpkins, the pumpkins themselves are tiny, but the vines still grow 40, 50 feet long.
Well, this is a huge bed that it's in our front yard, and people drive by and look at our pumpkins as they grow. So that's kind of entertainment for the neighborhood, too. Mm-hmm.
But now, as we start to get towards the back end of the season, the longer it takes a fruit to mature, the more you should be pinching off the flowers.
Okay.
Now, not summer squash, because that can go from flower to ripe fruit in a week.
Mm-hmm.
But something like a big heirloom tomato, a red bell pepper, a pumpkin, a tropical melon, all those flowers should be pinched off now, and you will have one of your best harvests ever.
Well, I know what I'll be doing for the next hour.
You'll be out deflowering your plants.
Yes, I will.
All right. Well, good luck, Arlene. It sounds like a very lush garden.
It is. Thank you so much for your help.
Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye.
1-888-346-9499. Myra, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Oh, thank you. It's a pleasure to speak to you.
Well, it's a pleasure to speak to you, Myra. Where are you?
I am in Egg Harbor Township, New Jersey.
All right. What can we do for Myra?
For a year and a half, I have been struggling with these little tiny flies that have been identified as fungus gnats, and I have tried everything I can think of. I have tried thinking like a bug, trying to figure out where they're breeding, and I've been doing all kinds of strange things, and I've reduced the numbers, but I still have them.
Okay. Now, are they in your kitchen or are they in your houseplants?
I have a lot of houseplants. I've just been looking for where are they breeding.
Well, there's three things. They're breeding in the soil of your houseplants.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
That's why they're called a fungus gnats. They're larvae. Were you to sacrifice a houseplant or you wanted to repot it during a period of heavy infestation, when you took the plant out of its container, if you knocked all the soil away from the roots, you would see these gnarly little white wormy things that are the larval form of the fungus gnats. So the adult fungus gnats, which resemble fruit flies and drain flies, and they are all in the same basic family, the adult fungus gnats wait till you water your house plants. And then when the soil is nice and wet on the top, they lay their eggs in that wet soil. The little creatures that come out of the eggs, they tunnel down, and I believe they survive on different fungal organisms that are near the roots of the plants and in your house plant soil. And then when they're big enough, they will come up out of the surface of the soil, probably when it's dry, and then they will fly in your face and annoy you and go into the bathroom and everything like that. This is a sign of overwatered house plants.
Yeah. Well, I've tried everything. I tried drying out the soil, not watering for more than 2 weeks at a time.
Okay, good, good.
Someone told me to put builder sand in there so they couldn't get down into the soil. That didn't work. Then I tried BT, thoracide. That didn't work. So then I thought maybe they couldn't get down to the thoracide because of all the sand. So I tried to vacuum out the sand, and I ended up
destroying your vacuum cleaner.
Yeah, because sand, I was getting cut in my legs. The sand was blowing out the other end of the vacuum, so that didn't work.
So you got so close. Long term, I want you to think about backing off the watering of your plants, watering them less frequently. Make sure no water ever sits in saucers underneath. And you were very close. BT, Bacillus thuringiensis, the basic form, is for use against caterpillars. That one of the brand names for that is thoracide. But the scientists who discovered the basic form of BT keep looking for new ones, and there are others, and they're identified by a third letter. The most famous one is the one you need, which is BTI. Bacillus thuringiensis israeliensis, because it was discovered on a beach in Israel, specifically on the paw of the researcher's cat. He got lucky.
Wow.
So BTI is registered for two uses. And you've seen it because you've been in hardware stores and home centers and you've seen the little donuts.
Yes.
Yeah, that's BTI. The little donuts that you're supposed to throw on ponds and stuff.
Right, I have seen that. I have the discs. Can I just soak them in some water?
You know, you can try it. I would take them outside. I would bang them up with a hammer. And then I would soak them in water and for 24 hours and then try it. Be patient because it's like having fleas. You know, you have to, there's eggs in there that are going to hatch. But then the larva will not reach the adult form. And the
How
adults
long do you
don't
think it should take.
I'm going to say be patient and give it a month, but it might be 2 weeks before, because the adults
I would have to water maybe two or three times before.
This would be a good time where you have permission to overwater for the last time.
Okay.
To make sure the soil is wet with BTI. But once you break that cycle fully, the adults don't live long.
All right, that's great. Thank you so much for that information.
You were so close, Myra. You were off by one letter. All right, take care.
Thanks. Bye.
Well, it's time for me to take a little break and announce that I'll be doing a free composting workshop on Wednesday evening, September 10th, at the Phoenixville Country Club in Phoenixville, PA. I'll reveal everything you need to know to turn your soon-to-be abundant fall leaves and maybe even some of your kitchen waste into fabulous food and mulch for your lawn, landscape, and garden. That's Wednesday, September 10th at 7:30 at the Phoenixville Country Club. But don't go looking for all the details at the events section of our website just yet, because we're coming right back with lots more of your fabulous phone calls and the story on what happened to everybody's poor hydrangeas this season. I'm Mike McGrath, and this is You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia.
You Bet Your Garden is made possible in part by Summit Responsible Solutions. Summit Mosquito Dunks and Mosquito Bits contain BTI, which naturally controls mosquitoes without harming other living things, including people and pets. Online at summitresponsiblesolutions.com.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up later in the show, there is a distinct lack of bloom on a certain class of flower over much of the country. What happened to everybody's hydrangeas? I'll have the full story for you when we do the question of the week. In the meantime, though, it's a fascinating phone call show, so we're hopping right back to your fascinating phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Julia, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi.
Hello, Julia. How are you?
I'm doing well today. Thanks, Mike, for having me.
Well, thank you for being had. Where are you, Julia?
I'm in Fremont Hills, Missouri.
Oh, okay. The show me state. What can we do for Julia in Missouri?
Well, we are having an issue with our city. We are not an HOA. We are a city. And we are a small city of about 800 people, and we live along a golf course. And the city is trying to pass an ordinance basically limiting the amount of garden space to 200 square feet, as well as basically completely eliminating container gardening other than flowers. And they're also trying to, tell you what you can plant for hedging and things along of that nature. And I was just wondering if you could relate some of the benefits that you know of urban or suburban gardening that we could express to the city leaders at the hearing to further our mission of gardening.
I would dress up as a tomato plant and chain myself to the doors. Are you kidding me? These people are out of control. Now, you mentioned that you're not in kind of a planned community with an HOA, but you mentioned that the city is involved with a golf course. What's going on there? Does the golf course have something to do with these restrictions?
No, actually, it's been more of the citizens of the city. Several have expressed that they don't want any gardens. They just want, grass, and they want to turn on their sprinklers and get to mow more grass. And I turn on my sprinklers and I get to eat tomatoes. So
right. And there's been no talk of taking these people to re-education centers.
That's been our mission the last couple of weeks, is to try to re-educate them. And we're calling you to see if we could gain any insight as to, have you heard of people dealing with this in the past, what's been done, what we can do to educate people to the benefits of gardening, because it seems so obvious to me, but to others, they think that mowing their backyard that's just grass, which is, fine for them if that's what they want, but it seems that they want to extend, their views onto the gardeners, and
so
we want to...
You're saying that private citizens in this town are approaching the local government and saying, we want you to pass these restrictive laws.
And it's gone to the point where our planning and zoning has actually drafted an ordinance. Some of the regulations are what I expressed earlier. So it's been drafted, and it's going to hearing on the 21st of August.
Well,
so we're really trying to, preempt this and prevent a lot of it from going through.
Okay, your first phone call is going to be to the National Gardening Association.
Okay.
The NGA.
Okay.
Your second phone call is going to go to the National Community Gardening Association.
Okay.
And they will give you support. And this is not a joke. But I think then you want to start making phone calls, sending emails, and drafting the most wonderful letter anyone has ever written to Michelle Obama at the White House, and saying there appears to be a resurgence of Neanderthals in a small section of Missouri trying to undo all of your good work. They want our children to graze on Kentucky bluegrass and fescue instead of homegrown tomatoes and cucumbers.
Well, and one of the biggest things that we're hearing is concerns over property values and gardens. And so can you speak to the value of a garden and its beauty and property value?
I'm a frequent guest on a radio show called Real Estate Today.
Okay.
And we always talk about the value, and there are various realtor associations, national associations of realtors, and right up on their website, you're going to see the information that a well-landscaped house is worth, somewhere between 10 and 12% more. And a really badly landscaped house, that's an unkempt one with weeds where the lawn hasn't been mowed, that can decrease the value by close to 20%.
Okay.
And there is nothing inherently unpleasant about vegetable gardening. You can go either to your local library, or you can go on online, check out Amazon, print out covers, but there must be 50 books about ornamental vegetable gardens, artistically displayed vegetable gardens. And if this law got passed, I would give everyone, all 800 homeowners, tomato plants or forbidden plants. This is absolutely insane. It's a throwback. And the final thing that you have to say, this will make national news, and your city will be the laughingstock of America.
Well, thank you so much, Mike, for your encouragement. And we are fighting the good fight here in Fremont Hills. But, you know, we really have gotten a lot of support from a lot of the citizens around. So I don't feel like it's everyone, certainly.
And there's somebody around who's either a lawyer or a paralegal or someone like that who can look at the laws of your community. And, for instance, if this Byzantine thing gets passed, you can probably create your own referendum and reverse it.
Okay.
It's all written down in your laws and rules and regulations. And if you know them, you can accomplish anything.
Well, thank you so much. I appreciate you taking my call and all your advice, and we will get busy.
And I'll chain myself to the doors with you.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Good luck.
All right. Thanks.
1-888-346-9499. Josh, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi. How are you?
I'm doing good, Josh. How are you, sir?
Good. Actually, down at the beach right now, so we're doing real good.
What beach are you at?
Cape May.
Oh, so you are down ashore.
Yeah, yep.
And where are you when you're not down ashore?
We are in Glenside.
Okay, what can we do for Josh currently down ashore?
We've been at our house going on 4 years now, and when we first bought the house, we had to tear up the whole front yard due to terracotta drain line issues with roots. And my problem is now I cannot get grass to grow. I tried to plant in the fall twice and it burns out, and I'm just having no luck with it. I don't know if it's the soil, the sun, you know, I really don't know what to do with it.
Fall planting, if your timing is anywhere close, is supposed to be bulletproof, Josh. So you're failing to count to two here so far. We got to figure out what's going on. So,
well, the only thing that I have noticed that's happened consistently is the grass burns out.
When?
So in the midsummer.
Oh, okay. Well, that's typical. That could be care. But let's go back a little bit. You said you had a terracotta drain line and tree roots got into it and you had to tear everything up. Did you remove any of the trees?
No, we didn't. The pine tree is still there. It's a fairly mature tree.
Okay. Now, how much sun does the area get?
Well, it gets pretty direct sun at midday from about 1 o'clock till 3 o'clock.
Wow.
Plenty of sun. But then half of it is under a magnolia tree.
Yeah.
So when I plant a seed, I do a mix. But the grass seems so fine in that mix that it really isn't hardy enough to take that full blast of sun.
Well, I don't think your piddling amount of sun is the issue here, Josh. First of all, 2 hours of sun is not enough to keep even the most shade-tolerant grass alive. The minimum is supposed to be 4 hours mm-hmm. of sun. I think the bigger issue and what you're interpreting as the grass burning up from the sun is the grass losing the battle to the tree roots for any moisture
really? Okay.
and nutrients. Yeah. Whenever grass is growing under trees, most people are hip to think, okay, I've got shade that's a real issue. But what they don't think about, and what you, I have to be honest and say, you had a big boxing lesson in, is how pervasive that root system is throughout that entire area. If you say that's a very old evergreen, a very tall evergreen, well, the amount of root system in the ground, that's been growing as long as the top of the tree has. They don't stop.
Yeah, it's at least 50 years old.
Well, and now you like it, right? And having a nice specimen tree out there.
Yeah, I mean, it's not the most beautiful pine tree, but I would never consider cutting it down.
Okay, because then you're not going to have a lawn.
Yeah, so that's it.
That's really it. Especially if you planted grass seed last fall, say between August 15th and the end of September, and it's not in good shape now.
The weeds have more or less taken over.
And Josh, you realize this has been the coolest, wettest summer in history. This has been your lawn's best chance.
Yeah, the weather we've had this year would have been a lot better to try to get it to recover.
Yes. But now, who cuts the lawn, you or a service?
I do.
And how high do you cut it?
Like about 3 inches.
And when you had your previous dead lawns, when did you feed them?
In the fall.
Okay. Yeah. I think what you have to do is realize that the area out there is what's called dry shade. And if you go online and you look up ground covers for dry shade, you will find plants that will be very acceptable and that will cohabitate with those trees. And I would advise you, if you can, to even install them in the fall.
Okay.
The good news is that there are many ground cover plants available to you that will be labeled for dry shade, which, again, is what you have. So take a walk through those, install those at the proper time of year and enough substance for them to spread out, and I think you'll be really happy with the result.
Okay, great.
All right, Josh?
All right, thank you very much.
Keywords, dry shade.
Yes, thanks, Mike.
All right, take care, man.
Bye-bye.
1-888-346-9499. Paula, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Thanks, Mike. It's good to be here because I really need your help.
Oh, very good. We're always happy to help. Where is Paula who needs my help?
I'm in Gainesville, Virginia. It's a suburb of Washington, D.C.
Okay, very good. What can we do for Paula in Gainesville?
Well, Mike, we're planning a wedding for my daughter this fall. And I've discovered a problem with what I believe to be chiggers.
Really?
Yes. We have a mosquito problem, but I deal with that, with spray and things like that.
Well, that might not be the best thing for your wedding guest, Paul.
No, it's not. And that's my concern. I did a little impromptu research online to try to figure out what to do about the chiggers, and you can tell because they get up under your clothing in places you'd rather not have.
Oh, okay. So
scratchy areas.
chiggers are much more of a much further south pest. I don't equate them with the D.C. area. So you think you have chiggers in your backyard. You go out and you come inside and you have this intolerable itching with really no visible insects on you. But it's really
right, and it generally happens a day or two later. And I've been putting up, I guess, with it for years because I try not to use anything toxic in my yard, any chemicals.
Okay.
But I've enlisted help. And now
and they're more than happy to spread plutonium around, right?
Well, they they're complaining about the same thing, so I realized I needed to get serious about doing something about this problem. To our socks.
Right.
Tucking waste in, spraying down with DEET.
And this isn't when you're walking through high grass or anything. This is when you're walking on a mowed lawn?
Well, and in wood mulched beds as well, yes. Yes.
That's... Chiggers, to my understanding, are a little bit like ticks in that they like wet, brushy habitat.
Yes, that's what I can't quite figure out.
Now, there are exactly. there are other creatures. Fleas would be visible. You would see the little black fleas.
Yes. I had a pet one. Well, actually, we bought a house. Our first home we purchased was infested with fleas.
And God bless you.
I saw those, yeah.
Okay, so you know that's not it.
I'm positive it's not fleas.
Okay. All right, listen. So I'm going to give you two quick choices here.
Okay.
There are two types of organically approved sprays for situations like this. The first, the one that's been around the longest, is concentrated garlic oil. And this is the one that you'll probably find even in retail locations. The original product was called Garlic Barrier. It was created by organic farmers to spray on their crops as a pest repellent. and they noticed that it knocked out all the mosquitoes in the area at the same time.
So it
has become very popular as a mosquito fogger, a non-toxic one. So I would go out and I would get a garlic oil product and I would spray it in your backyard ASAP and see what the results are. And then a newer product that is said to be even better for repelling ticks is cedar oil, C-E-D-A-R, oil made from
the tree. Okay.
Like the tree. And that functions in exactly the same way. I would spray the garlic oil right away, see what kind of results you get. If all of a sudden you see the situation has gotten much better, I would continue spraying garlic oil weekly up until the wedding. It smells like garlic for a couple of hours after application, but once it dries, the smell goes away. If you try the garlic oil and you get a minimal to no response, I would already have researched a way to get the cedar oil in, and then I would spray that. Those are your two absolute best choices.
Okay, that sounds good.
So congratulations on your wedding. Get spraying, and good luck.
Thank you so much, Mike.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, it's time for me to take a little break and remind homeowners in the North and Mid-Atlantic states who are suffering severely tattered turf that the time to overseed or just plain start over is now. Cool season grasses like fescue and bluegrass rarely succeed when their seed is sown in the spring. But putting that seed down mid-August to mid-September virtually ensures great grass. But don't go looking for all the details under L for lawn care in the Garden Answers A to Z section of our website just yet, because we'll be right back with more of your fabulous phone calls and the reason why there are so few hydrangeas in bloom right now. I'm Mike McGrath, and this is You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia.
You Bet Your Garden is made possible in part by Summit Responsible Solutions. Summit Mosquito Dunks and Mosquito Bits contain BTI, which naturally controls mosquitoes without harming other living things, including people and pets. Online at summitresponsiblesolutions.com.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike McGrath, and we're in the stretch now, cats and kittens. In just a little bit, we'll get to the question of the week, in which we give a definitive reason for why you are not seeing many, if any, hydrangea blooms in your area this summer. Up until then, though, it's a couple more of your fascinating phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Rosemary, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Thank you.
Well, thank you, Rosemary. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I am doing just fine. Thank you. And where is Rosemary Good?
In Northeast Philadelphia.
Okay, very good. What can we do for Rosemary?
My question is how to grow grass, and it's a little bit different than your ordinary lawn. I'm calling about the Philadelphia Canoe Club, which is located at the confluence of the Schuylkill River and the Wissahickon Creek.
Oh, okay. So it's not, it's like one of the places on Boathouse Row by the Art Museum, but it's not on Boathouse Row. It's much further down.
It's actually much further upstream.
Right.
It's upstream of the Twin Bridges.
So you have a boathouse down there?
It's the Philadelphia Canoe Club.
Right, but normally that would mean you have a boathouse. Do you have sculls? Do you have canoes? You
know. Canoes and kayaks.
Okay, so you got a bad lawn there.
Yes, and we believe that it's because of the flooding, and we have constant flooding. Because we're at the confluence of these two bodies of water, the water turns around. It goes down the Schuylkill, and then the Wissahickon pushes into the Schuylkill, and then in that triangle, it turns around and becomes a big eddy. So instead of having the water flow downstream, it turns around and turns into an eddy, just keeps going around and around, and then all the silt lays on top of the grass.
Okay.
And we have tried several times to grow grass. We've tilled the soil, we've removed some silt, put grass seed down, we've fertilized it.
Oh, my goodness. What did you fertilize it with?
Oh, gee, I don't know.
Don't do that again. You know, you're going right into the water there. Toledo just had to shut down their drinking water for 2 weeks because of fertilizers. Lawn fertilizers causing algae blooms. So don't do that again. You have to respect that area.
Okay.
You know, I realize you want a lawn, but nature doesn't care what you want.
Uh-huh.
And it doesn't sound like an area that is flooding several times a year is ever going to support a lawn. Some grasses can take more moisture than others, but none of them can take submersion. What's the need for the lawn?
Well, we use it for our different activities. You know, we might have a picnic. We might be training out there. We might have summer meetings out there.
There's one thing I can suggest, but I think it's going to be an exercise in futility. There is a very expensive, exotic species of bluegrass. I believe it's called Poa sapina. POA is the name for all bluegrass species. And there is one that was bred or discovered that can actually take constantly wet feet. It is enormously expensive.
Yeah, really.
It is really hard to find. And you are in a classic situation of, I know exactly the area you're talking about. It's beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
It's a beautiful natural area, and you're trying to dominate it with an inappropriate kind of planting. How big is the common area that you hope to achieve to use for, like, picnics and gatherings and stuff?
It's about 200 by 100.
Okay. My suggestion, you know, unless you want to go for the Poa sapina, and I think it might not survive in that situation.
Okay.
But since you want it for walking on and stuff like that, two things that would achieve that, you could cover the area, drop in edging to keep it in place. You could cover the area with a really nice grade of sand, and that would be permeable. That would still allow the rainwater to go through. It would give you a flat area. If it got disturbed by flooding, you could roll it out or rake it out. Kind of, you've seen these areas in Japanese Zen gardens.
Yeah.
Where they have those areas. Or build a very low deck over the entire area and have an elevated area that would stay up from the flooding, be constantly dry, and be a safe place for people to walk on and play on.
Okay. You know, can I just tell you one thing?
Sure.
We had a caretaker about, say, 6 or 7 years ago who had landscaping as a hobby.
Right.
So he was in heaven down there. He actually made the grass grow.
Okay, well, is he alive?
Yeah, he is.
Well, go ask him what he did.
Well, I think what he did is he just took constant care of it, and that made it grow.
Yeah, I mean, no matter what you do out there, making a boardwalk out there would be you raise the money to do it, you install it, and then you're done, and it's semi-permanent. You don't have to take care of it. The sand would simply need, you need that special rake to keep it nice and level. Yeah. I think it'd be a good look. You could always replace it. But yes, you'd be constantly reseeding a lawn. If this is the case, this gentleman was probably reinstalling the lawn every fall.
I think you're right, and I think it was probably more often than that.
Yeah.
Okay, well...
No, it's not really a problem, Rose. You just have to stop insisting that it be this one specific plant. That's where good people hurt nature, when they try to dominate and insist that this one plant has to be in this one spot. And that's when a lot of harm can get done by people with good intentions.
Okay.
All right, so you preserve that beautiful water, and I'm going to come down there. I'm going to take a look at your little corner of paradise one of these days.
Well, please do. Let me know. We'll make you our special guest.
No, I'm going to sneak up on you.
Oh, okay. That's fine, too.
All right, Rose. Good luck.
Thank you very much. Bye.
1-888-346-9499. Alan, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, I'm calling from Honeybrook, Pennsylvania.
Where is Honeybrook?
You know the Pennsylvania Turnpike, the Morgantown exit?
Okay, so you're in central Pennsylvania.
Yeah, just 5 miles south of the Morgantown exit.
All right, what can we do for Ellen in Honeybrook, PA?
I live in a row home, so I don't have much of a yard.
Mm-hmm.
But there's one section in my yard that when I moved in there 8 years ago, there was a small patch of Pachysandra. Well, that small patch has gotten extremely large, and... I don't want to waste them, and I have in the back of my property a very, very tall, old evergreen tree. It has to be at least 60 feet tall,
mm-hmm.
and underneath it, there's lots of needles from it.
Right.
And the soil isn't that great. No grass grows there. I was wondering, can I transplant my Pachysandra back there, and what's the time of the year to do it, if that would be a good place to put it?
Well, first of all, it is very common, especially for white pines and some of the other evergreens, to drop a lot of needles. Everybody knows about the leaf drop of deciduous trees in the fall because it's so obvious. Mm-hmm. The leaves change color and drop to the ground. Evergreens, people think they still have their baby teeth. But in truth, evergreens are constantly dropping old needles and regrowing new ones, just like our human skin. I think it's even on the same cycle that every 7 years or so, all of the needles on an evergreen will be relatively new. And so that pine straw is actually the favored mulch down south. One way that they're way ahead of us in gardening, instead of covering their landscapes in chipped up pallets from China, spray painted some god-awful color never seen in nature. They use this pine straw and what are called pine fines from the very bottom of the pile. And it makes a beautiful mulch in the landscape. And it's very natural. And it is perfectly normal for nothing to grow at the base of a big tree like that. The soil underneath them tends to become very acidic over time if they've been dropping needles for a couple of decades. And the roots are providing a lot of competition for water and nutrients in the area. That said, it is possible that the Pachysandra will thrive back there, but it also sounds what goes on after the pine tree.
There's a fence and then there's an alleyway that's all grass.
Oh, okay. So it's not a natural area. It's not woods or something like that.
No, no.
You know, if you backed up to a park or something, I would beg you not to do it because the Pachysandra would spread into the wild and overtake any native plants that were still back there. The answer to your question is I would do it at the end of August. I would start digging up some of the Pachysandra, transplanting it back there. And the only thing you're going to have to do is, if it doesn't rain right after that, is drag a hose out there and just let it drip at the base of the new plantings till they get established.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Just don't let them dry out after replanting. But fall is actually one of the best times to do this. I think Pachysandra will transplant better in the fall than it would in the spring.
Oh, that's cool. I'm glad I waited.
All right, Alan. Oh, yeah, not in the summer because it's a heat-sensitive plant. You may notice on the couple of hot days you had that the Pachysandra looked a little wilty.
No, this pack is so healthy. It doesn't look wilty. It just has gone crazy. Plus, it's in a damp area of my yard right now.
Yes, which it loves, yeah. So make sure it gets adequate moisture back there. And if it doesn't thrive, it's because the ground is too dry from the roots of the tree. But you won't have lost anything.
No, no, I wouldn't. Well, thank you very, very much.
My pleasure, Ellen. You take care.
You too. Bye.
All right. As promised, it's time for the question of the week. Where, oh, where have my hydrangeas gone? To get us started on answering that question, Alexis Landis, producer of You Bet Your Garden, read us the question.
Sure, Mike. Pat in Huntingtown, Maryland writes, I've had 10 hydrangeas in my yard for many years, and every summer they've produced beautiful bouquets for me to bring to work. This is the first year that not one of the bushes has bloomed, regardless of their location in my yard. Could it be because of the cold winter we had? Also, some years I cut the hydrangeas back in the fall and some years I don't. Is fall when you're supposed to cut them back?
Well, we'll take the pruning part first because it seems like I can't give this warning out often enough. No perennial plant should ever be cut back in the fall, ever, ever, ever. It interferes with them going dormant for the winter, which could cause permanent harm. And fall pruning can accidentally remove lots of flowers-to-be from blooming plants.
Really? Including hydrangeas? Is that what happened to her plants?
Well, you're always going to get a bad result when you prune spring-blooming plants, like azaleas, rhododendrons, and forsythia in the fall. These early bloomers have produced all of their flower buds for the following year by mid to late summer. And people who, quote, clean them up in the fall remove those buds and wind up with few to no flowers in the spring.
But hydrangeas bloom in the summer.
Right. And most other summer bloomers, like crepe myrtle and butterfly bush, do best if they get a nice pruning in the spring. After all, risk of frost is gone. But most hydrangeas bloom on what's called old wood, growth from previous years and not the current season. So when people prune their hydrangeas in the fall or the following spring, they're inadvertently removing the old wood that was poised to produce their summertime flowers.
But the temptation to prune is pretty strong. Hydrangeas don't look very nice in the winter.
Ha! No, and they look even worse in the spring. The old branches look dead, even though they're almost always just dormant, and they are certainly unattractive. But the people who resist temptation and leave them alone are absolutely going to have the most flowers that summer.
Can you ever prune them?
Yes, and it's one of my favorite cheap and sleazy gardening techniques. You leave them alone until all the flowers have formed early in the summer, and then you go in and remove all the barren, non-flowering branches that are hiding the blooms from view. It's a great trick that makes the plants look like they have twice as many flowers, and there's absolutely no risk of harming future displays.
So do you think that her hydrangeas didn't bloom because of the fall pruning?
Maybe. But nature has to share at least some of the blame, because her lack of flowers is the rule this year and not the exception. Few to no hydrangeas are blooming in the regions that experience the crippling once-in-every-20-year winter we barely survived.
Mike, I bet you've gotten lots of emails about this.
Dozens, and similar ones for crepe myrtle and fig trees. They fall into three basic categories. One, the plants are stone cold dead. There's no sign of green growth even late in the season. Two, the top parts are completely dead, but there is some green growth coming out of the ground.
That's only two. What's the third variation?
Well, their first email says my hydrangeas or figs or whatever are dead. But when I email them back and ask if there's any green growth at the bottom, they say yes. So apparently I thought I knew what the word dead meant, but I was wrong. At any rate, the vast majority of hydrangeas in especially harsh winter areas were very slow to do anything this spring. and then finally some green growth appeared at the base of most of them. That's what happened to mine, and from all the emails I've gotten, it seems like my plants were real poster children for this season.
Well, did you try to do anything?
Oh, yeah. In June, we carefully pruned back the old growth by just a couple of inches to see if that would stimulate the branches into doing something. We waited a couple of weeks, then when nothing sprouted, we removed all of the old branches that were crispy, snappy dead. And we finally cut the rest of the old sticks back so we could enjoy this year's new growth, which is very lush and full. The plants are exactly the height they should be at this point in the season.
But no flowers?
Alas, not a one. Zip, nada, bupkis. I do miss the big flowers, but I'm happy that the plants themselves are lush and healthy. And they don't look all that bad just as foliage plants. A lot better than the dead sticks of May. So to all those whose hydrangeas are in the same place, enjoy the lush greenery that reveals that your root system survived. And don't you dare prune them until the flowers form, hopefully, next summer. Because the new growth you have now will be the only old wood the plant will have to produce flowers on next season. Well, that sure was a revealing look at how to handle your hydrangeas now, wasn't it? Luckily for you, the question of the week appears in print at the Gardens Alive website. To read it over in detail, with links to previous articles about hydrangeas and proper pruning times, just click the link for the question of the week at our website, youbetyourgarden.org. Gardens Alive supports the You Bet Your Garden question of the week. Yikes, my producer is threatening to hack my hydrangeas if I don't get out of this studio. We must be out of time. But you can call us anytime at 1-888-346-9499. Or send us your email, you're tired, you're poor, you're wretched, refuse teeming towards our garden shore, at garden@whyy.org. And remember, anytime you send us an email, please, please tell us your location. Please, please. And visit our website, youbetyourgarden.org, where you'll find answers to all your garden questions, audio of this show, past shows, and our podcast. Elizabeth Perez Luna is executive producer of audio content for WHYY. Ken Queter plays our theme song. Our engineer this week has been Al Banks. Rich Banowitz and Sarah Kazar are You Bet Your Garden's webpage wonders. Our social media director is Amanda McGrath. Check out her fine work at the You Bet Your Garden Facebook page. Our editor is Al Staycation Banks. Alexis, don't call me at the airport. Landis produces You Bet Your Garden for WHYY-FM in Philadelphia. Our production assistant, Tricia Whiting, who has changed her name to Trixie, is on vacation in Korea. Hopefully she picked the right one. Filling in while she's away is Peter the Magic Christian. Our hired hand, Matt Mr. Moneybags Hudecki. Well, he would be away somewhere exotic, but he's still not up yet. I'm your host, Mike McGrath, and as soon as I get caught up here at work, I'll be heading for a glorious day on Soupy Island. But I'll make sure to swim back in time to see you again next week. Getting ready to feed your lawn for the fall? I'm Mike McGrath, and on the next thrilling episode of You Bet Your Garden, we'll travel to Toledo to illustrate just how easily your use of chemical fertilizers can cripple an entire city. Plus your fabulous phone calls.